So for this retreat, we have a theme, actually two themes that are going to be brought together. And the Dharma talks that we give will focus on these two intertwining themes. The first theme is that of the triple refuge, the refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. And the second theme is the three characteristics: impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self. And we'll connect these themes so that the refuge in the Buddha will connect to impermanence, the refuge in Dharma to unsatisfactoriness, dukkha, suffering, and the refuge in Sangha to not self. And it makes some sense to connect these two themes because especially the first two of these three characteristics, impermanence and suffering, unsatisfactoriness, is something that is deeply embedded in this life that we live. And it's often the source of tremendous suffering in our lives. Sickness, suffering is a source of suffering, but the impermanence, you know, the kind of epitome of impermanence is sometimes said to be sickness, old age, and death. And the existential meaning of these truths in our lives is something that Buddhism feels is very important to address, to meet, and to find our freedom from, to find freedom with, to somehow make our peace with them. And it's a task of everyone to live, we all live in a world that's radically and profoundly impermanent. And some people it takes a while to really understand that's the case. To really appreciate the how changing and inconstant and this world is very important, because it's the inconstancy, the impermanence, the unreliability of this world that often can be dramatically enough that it pulls the rug from underneath our lives. And here we are, and what do we do with this life of ours? And then the second of these characteristics is that of suffering or unsatisfactoriness, that you know, you don't have to go very far in most people's lives to find suffering in their lives, or something that feels unsatisfactory, or some anguish or struggle or stress that they carry with them. And we're not trying to avoid it or bypass it or pretty it over, whitewash it in Buddhist practice, but we really want to be honest about this life that we live and really meet the life directly and clearly for what it is. And so we want to be able to really, when they're suffering, to really appreciate it. And not just the ordinary sufferings of our life, but sometimes the deeper roots of dissatisfaction that sometimes can be carried along in the background for a lifetime of where we're at. Sometimes suffering comes unexpectedly and dramatically. Sometimes it's, you know, accompanies us day in, day out. And so this first two characteristics in particular are often said to be one of the important characteristics of our life that in Buddhism we want to really see and recognize and understand. But not in order to suffer better, but rather to find freedom from suffering. Rather to find a way out of our anguish, out of our fear and distress about this very core issue of many people's lives. And the three refuges are meant to be not an escape from life. You know, it's the word refuge, you mean refugee, you kind of disappear from where it's difficult, and not an escape. But rather the refuges are an understanding that brings safety, a refuge in this world of ours. And it's a way of delimiting, a way making clear something, some clear understanding, make clear, yes, we live in a world of impermanence. We live in a world with lots of suffering. And we see it, and there is an understanding, there is a practice, there is a movement of freedom where we can be safe in this world, where we can learn how to be free in the midst of it. And to go for refuge, this triple refuge in Buddhism, to take your support or get your orientation in life. The refuges are an orientation, or understanding about this life, gives clarity to a life that can be quite confusing. It's said that one of the functions of going for refuge is to eliminate fear. To no longer, a person who has refuge has no more any cause for fear. Now, you can go for refuge and still be afraid, but to really understand what the refuges are, the profundity of them, then you're able to meet this world of impermanence, of suffering, and not be afraid of it, find a safety or freedom in the midst of it. It's also said that in going for refuge, that there's something very profound that can happen, that can be said in a very ordinary way, maybe so ordinary it seems, maybe not so special or so profound. It said that if you go for refuge, if you really understand what the refuges are and how they function in our lives, the orientation they give our life, that there's no more cause to complain. Isn't that something? To say, really going for refuge, there's no more cause to complain for anything. Because the refuges give you a context for understanding what is important in this life, the values, the purpose, the understanding, the place that we have, and the possibility of living in a new way in this world. So the refuge in the Buddha is certainly the Buddha as an example, but the Buddha is an example of someone who discovered a heart, a mind that can be at peace in this world. It's a beautiful thing to be at peace. It's a beautiful thing to offer it as a gift to others, to learn how in the face of sickness, old age, and death, to find your peace, the kind of peace where we feel at home, not just peace that's kind of forced or something, but the kind of feeling at home with the circumstance, what's going on. And the Buddha represents that, and he does that with his in his life. And one of the primary examples of the ways that the Buddha was an exemplar of this was in the way that he died. That he died peacefully. He died with near the time of his death, he had a tremendous amount of pain and was quite sick. And old man. But he had the ability to lay down under a grove of trees and to peacefully kind of just pass away. This ability to go up against one's own death and be peaceful about it, or feel kind of at home with it, or to really feel that the refuges maybe are most important in the times when our life is most challenging, to find support and nourishment from this. So the Buddha is the example of this possibility. So we take refuge in this possibility of our own minds and hearts, of being at home with our life that we live. And then take refuge in the Dharma is in the process of our practice, that we have a practice that we can engage in, a practice that offers a path of how to make our way and navigate our way through this, a path and a practice which has a tremendous purpose and value in this life of ours. And even if we don't go very far with the practice, it can give tremendous meaning to one's life to know that one is on that path, no matter how far one goes. And then take refuge in the Sangha is to take refuge in the community of people who you practice with, the community of people who have witnessed what the Buddha has experienced. And so to go for refuge is a way of kind of defining, delimiting, understanding, making clear where we are in this world of confusion, this world of challenges, the world of impermanence, the world of unsatisfactoriness, of suffering. And then the last of the three characteristics is that of not-self, something that's sometimes difficult to understand. But it's really meant to be one of the whereas the first two can be seen kind of as some of the difficulties of life. This last characteristics of not self is meant to be one of the most profound insights that can be very freeing, such a relief to realize that in some very significant way that we don't have to take all this stuff so personally, that we don't have to kind of define ourselves or measure ourselves or defend ourselves or build ourselves up. We don't have to do anything about, you know, holding on to a self-concept. There's possible to kind of be to free ourselves from being limited, being defined by anything whatsoever. Not self is to realize no need to be defined by what your experience are, what's happening to you. And that's a freeing movement. And it can be sometimes a disorienting one to have this idea that Buddhism teaches not self. But we have the refuges. The refuges are the orientation, the grounding, the support for our lives. It gives us direction for our lives. For some of you, the idea of the refuges, the going for refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, might seem very religious. They're kind of the two Buddhists. Oh, gee, you know, you didn't sign up for this. It is maybe a Buddhist religious devotional way of saying something, but it's not meant to be particularly religious or devotional, but it's supposed to be meant to be very realistic, that we can take refuge, we can take support, we can take nourishment from your own capacity to have a heart that's at home in this world. You can take refuge and support and find safety in a practice of honesty and clear seeing and compassion. And you can take refuge and support to know you're not doing this alone. It's a very profound thing to understand that we're practicing together. And this way that IRC is set up to really try to support the idea that we're all in it together is really meant to point to the profundity of our interdependent mutual kind of way in which we find our way in our life. So this is the theme or the two themes for the retreat, and we hope that this supports you and guides you during these days together. And we'll add to that the instructions we give in the morning. So the formal beginning of a retreat is actually doing a little ritual of going for refuge or taking the refuges, Buddha, Dharma, the Sangha, and then also the precepts. And it's the teacher who usually will lead the refuge ceremony, the precepts ceremony, who then talks about them a little bit. And John and I talked about that before, and I said, well, you can talk about the refuge and the precepts, because he's going to... But then I just did about the refuges. So we didn't plan it so well. Well, I didn't. But John doesn't care. He'll just pick up where I left off. And there's so much to be said. So,
well, there's a lot to say about the truth of, I think the word shelter, you know, from the busyness and that we live in, and that we come here, in a sense, as shelter from that. And that in doing that, there's a way of really calling on the Buddha. It's such a profound thing, this ideal of enlightenment or awakening. And that somehow, in a sense, we can call on it. And call on it not just as an external thing, but as something inside us that knows the truth of the fact that that possibility of awakening is present and alive in us, and that we come to sit here to actually within the shelter itself to sometimes just find a little piece of it within us. I think Gil did a good job of kind of explaining it well. So what I'd like to do is really go into the formalities of this. And again, I think over the years I see how precious it is to, you know, sometimes I think of it as maybe you could say calling on the ancestors. I know that's maybe a little woo-woo some ways, but in a sense, there's such a long lineage here of people who came together, of finding a shelter to sit together and kind of find their highest aspirations for awakening. And that in that process, this kind of calling and knowing that you're not sitting here alone, you're sitting here actually with thousands and thousands and thousands of people who also had that same kind of inspiration or inkling that somehow they could kind of step out of the kind of social conditioning and step into a community that's dedicated to this whole path of waking up, you know. So I think we'll just go right into it, you know, because it's something that's, it is, in a sense, I kind of think out of the calling of all art, both Guild and my teachers from the past that are supporting us here, in a sense of, you know, sometimes I think I'm just a mouthpiece from a past that's been passed on from generation to generation so that we can actually have a peace and shelter from all the world of, as Gil said, the suffering that goes on is so tremendous out there, you know, and that we need to support each other in this. So as the formality, this, we'll just be doing it in the original language in Pali. I'll just do it in call and response. And again, it's the first is just a salutation which is repeated three times to the Buddha for, you know, for his work that he did to free himself. And that's done three times, and then we take refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, and the Sangha. And there's a word, dutyampi, means for the second time. And then it's done for the third time, which is tatyampi. And it's really so much of this is, you know, all spiritual practices, so much of it is just repetition. You know, we don't say anything fancy or new, you know. It's really just bringing it home, remembering it over and over again. So that's really the process here. So just taking a moment to kind of just breathe in. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samha Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samha Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato.
Samha.
Sambuddhasa. Buddham. Saranam. Gacchami. Dhammam. Saranam. Gacchami. Sangam. Saranam. Gacchami. Dutiyampi. Buddham. Saranam. Gacchami. Dutiyampi. Dhammam. Saranam. Gacchami. Dutiyampi. Sangam. Saranam. Gacchami. Tatiyampi. Buddham. Saranam. Gacchami. Tatiyampi. Dhammam. Saranam. Gacchami. Tatiyampi. Sangam. Saranam. Gacchami. So in a way, it's just calling on the really empowerment of thousands of years of a community coming together and individuals coming together to, in a sense, kind of give themselves fully to this really simple practice of turning one's attention towards what's going on inside there. So as just a piece of the tradition here, we also, this is sort of gives direction. It's like a ship, and where we could go many directions, and this is just pointing the ship in one specific direction as a community. We also can have some rules. That is really, you know, I think of them as pretty much about, it's really about love and caring. And they are simply the precepts, you know, that are these are the most fundamental ways that we keep ourselves out of troubles and hold others from getting in trouble. So that's this simple way of calling the precepts. Just to go through them first, you know, the first one is really, what a precious thing to be alive, you know, and that our job is to not interfere in that process for ourselves or others, and really it is taking care, and that sometimes in retreat, I think it's been so helpful over the years, you know, that instinct, particularly having spent almost 12 years in Asia, and mosquitoes, and that instinct of you know, automatic to hit, just slug it, you know, and coming to a retreat and having, realizing, oh, what I'm doing is I'm actually becoming conscious, I'm becoming mindful and aware of the habits, and that's such an sometimes an instinctual habit that we grow up with, you know, and so actually to have that mind full of what we're intending here, to not harm, you know, so that fundamental of not to harm. The second one, which is really about the safety of the community, which all these are about, is not taking what is not given. You know, and it's such a great thing because so much of society is so complex. But here again, our ideals are to keep it so simple that we can kind of leave the external world so we can go kind of deep inside ourselves and kind of listen to what's going on underneath everything. And we need that external safety, and that safety is that, you know, people are attached to their objects. And that in this case, you know, you can leave things out, and just because the community, this is the deal, you come back and you'll still be there. You know, that's pretty nice, you know, and a sense of safety, which is so fundamental, you know. So the second one is just not taking what is not given. Another one, in the instinctual part of us, which has to do a lot of times with the power of sexuality, you know. And in this particular arena, you know, it's not that it doesn't arise or come up, but it's that there's no acting on it. And so the ideals here is really the simplest way to put it is just celibacy, you know, that we just leave that at the door coming in here, no matter what goes on in our minds and stuff. But as a community, we know, oh, we can be safe with this. There's been so much, you know, craziness and harm. I know you were all teenagers, so you know about this. And this is simply a community that stays, again, about the safety of that truth, you know. And then the fourth one, a little more complicated in this particular arena. And first of all, it's really based on the fact that, you know, it's not this external silence that we're kind of taking on here. I think it just sometimes it just magnifies, it sort of ramps up your internal dialogue, your monologue that's going on in there. But as a community, you know, unless you need, you know, help with certain things or something in the kitchen or need, we actually keep this as a silent community, you know. And in a way, I always used to think of it as, oh, you know what? This is coming to retreat, even though you have the support of all these people, but this is a really something that is for yourself and honoring it. If you're honoring it for yourself, then you honor it for others. You know, so we keep the silence as a, what is it? A really, it's such a great supportive piece to kind of hear our own, I was going to say our own garbage, but yeah, I guess I'm not too far off there, you know. All the chit-chat that goes on inside there. Also, I've always found it helpful, I know from some people find it inspirational, but actually not to read or write. And I know some of you may, you know, get up in the morning and write and stuff, but I think the preference would be here is not to read or write, not to speak. And if you could fundamentally just keep your attention in your experience here, you know, you would do great for the time you're here, you know, and whatever, it's all retreats, they're just short little things in our lives. And so also with that, I'd like to say that, you know, for me, a lot of it, if you could just keep your mind and your body, really simple, you know, I know you're going to run off a little, but just remember to come back, stay here. This is the game here. It's just stay here. And then the fifth one, you know, it's really it's things that cause carelessness and heedlessness. And I think the first is just honoring that we have a society that, you know, due to drugs and alcohol, there's so much suffering and family systems, you know, how many people, and I know I have been influenced by drugs and alcohol. And so here it's really this truth, again, for the community, that we kind of take this precept of not taking things that cause, not medications I'm talking about, but more recreational substances that cause carelessness and heedlessness. You know, pretty simple. So we're just going to do this in English, just take the precepts as a community. Again, a lot of this is just creating the energetics for our time here. So for the purpose of training, I undertake the precept of non-harming. For the purpose of training, I undertake the precept of not taking that which is not given. For the purpose of training, I undertake the precept of keeping celibacy. For the purpose of training, I undertake the precept of keeping silence. For the purpose of training, I undertake the precept of not indulging in alcohol or drugs. So these are kind of the formalities that give the community its direction its ability to care for each other, ultimately.
So we end the first evening, this evening, early, so that those of you who would like can go to bed early. I kind of recommend it. And those of you who would like to sit up longer are welcome to stay in the hall. Do so. And I hope that as you go to bed tonight that you take a few moments under your covers with your head on the pillow and appreciate yourself for coming here on retreat, appreciating the community you're with, and appreciate what the endeavor we're going to do here, and let yourself feel contented and happy, and maybe remind any part of you that's anxious that this is a very safe place. May you sleep deeply and well. Thank you.